CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor, to Sydney, Australia, New South Wales, my longtime colleague Jeremy Zakas. 20 years Jeremy's been with me. He joined reporting from Australia after the 9/11 attack, and we begin with Jeremy's memories of those moments and days from his point of view before we plunge into 2021 and the great controversy over the new AUKUS alliance between Australia and the United Kingdom and the United States. Jeremy, back in the time machine, 9/11/2001, it was morning time in America, the middle of the night then for you in Sydney. What are your memories of when you learned and what you thought had happened?
G'day, John. Wow, 20 years has certainly gone fast. And back then, I don't know if you remember, I was actually working for a US space think tank, the Emergency Response and Research Institute. And that night in particular, I happened to cop the, I call it the editorial shift, where I was actually running the daily intelligence report, as we called it. So early in the evening here in Australia, we're starting to put together the reporting, and it was a dead quiet day. September 11 in Australia was so quiet. At that point, I only had one news story. It was an unmanned aerial vehicle shot down in Iraq's southern no-fly zone. Everything looked pretty quiet for that evening. But then, come around about 20 past 10 at night, Australia time, emails started flooding in. A plane had hit the World Trade Center. Was this an accident? We had clients, we had our customers from the think tank emailing us saying, what do you think of this? As soon as that second plane hit, though, we knew it was probably going to be terrorism, and the rest is history. So needless to say, for the rest of that evening, the original cut of the UAV crashing in Iraq completely didn't make it. We went straight to a special coverage of the September 11 events, and it was a rolling feast. I mean, here in Australia, we had the live news broadcasts on television, but at the same time, I had people who are in New York, people who are in Washington, emailing us as well, giving us a lot of updates from around the Pentagon area and around Lower Manhattan. And I honestly don't think all of us at the Institute slept for probably about 3 weeks. We had ongoing coverage, and me being in Australia, being the opposite side of the world, I had the coverage while America slept, and then America took over while I slept. So, John, wow, it really, I just can't believe 20 years has passed. And it seems so fresh, though, those days, because I remember everything we did. And it was, for me, as a young analyst, it really sort of let me cut my teeth on something that will never happen again, hopefully, and something that was a complete, it was a game changer in the world. And things that happened then, we still feel ramifications today with security.
Yes, 2021, France's foreign minister denounced what he called the duplicity, disdain, and lies surrounding the sudden rupture of France's lucrative contract to make submarines for Australia in favor of a U.S. deal, and declared that a crisis is at hand among the Western allies. Never a quiet moment, Jeremy. We don't have any time for reflection of 2001. France is, at this moment, making sharp remarks about the United Kingdom, about Australia, about your prime minister. How is this playing on your media now?
Well, John, we are such larrikins here in Australia, and I guess the French have caught the short end of the stick now. It's constantly in our media, needless to say, but it's really pointing out the fact more so that what we've done is in Australia's best interest. The media has come down heavily on Scott Morrison, our Prime Minister's side, and pointed out the fact that this is not the first time this issue about the submarines contract has come up. For the last at least several years, the French contract has been a cause of conjecture about whether or not it's the best thing for Australia. And, you know, the media is not sympathetic to the French president at all. There's pointing out the fact that this was really a raw deal for Australia. The submarines were probably going to be outdated when we got them. They weren't really useful in the South China Sea saga. And honestly, nuclear submarines was probably where we'd have to get to. So the media, unsympathetic to France, very sympathetic, interestingly, to our Prime Minister Scott Morrison, who has copped a lot of flak from COVID recently. So it's certainly not over, though. We've got a long way to go with this story.
And China is pointing fingers at Australia, at the United Kingdom, at everyone, as far as I can tell. China, though, has been especially belligerent towards Australia. Do you expect this, or is there anticipation that that will change? How do your commentators respond?
This was absolutely expected. China really has been putting the thumb screws into Australia for a long time. You may remember last year they were very hard on us about our time in Afghanistan, claiming we were murdering our children, murdering our innocents, and it was all to do with the South China Sea. China took every opportunity to point out Australia's follies and basically make us look bad. What's probably really upset them right now, though, is this is an absolute clear indication that Australia is with the United States, is with the United Kingdom, and it's not coming down on China's side in the South China Sea. Not that that was ever really up for any debate, but this was the clearest message Australia has given to China that, you know what, we don't believe what they're doing in the South China Sea is correct, and we're going to do something about it. So what we do expect to see is China over the next couple of days, next coming weeks, they're going to continue this rhetoric that Australia is effectively enhancing, escalating the security situation in the China Sea, that we're really contributing to the problem when at the end of the day, we're really just going on defense based on everything that China has been doing over the last at least 5 years.
Jeremy, you're now involved in the Quad, India, Australia, Japan, and the United States. You're involved in ANZUS, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, and now the alliance of the United Kingdom, the U.S., and Australia, all three together. That is enough alliances for any one country. Is there dissent in your country about all these arrangements? Are there voices being raised, especially because they're nuclear-powered submarines? Do you hear that?
Yes, the anti-nuclear lobby has reared its head, but it's not as powerful as it was back in the 1980s, for example, and really it's lost a lot of its prestige over the years. But the anti-nuclear lobby is really the only one that's had any issues to do with this, especially with the alliances. But a lot of people are pointing out that it's not nuclear weapons we're getting, it's the nuclear propulsion systems in these submarines, which will allow us to strategically defend ourselves. So the anti-nuclear argument really does start to wane there, because that was originally based on us not getting nuclear weapons back in the 1980s and never getting nuclear weapons. So really it's not causing a lot of problems. I think the most interesting part is that despite our Prime Minister getting a lot of criticism and a lot of pushback from most sectors of the Australian community on most things that he does on any given day, especially COVID and a few other defence issues, this one has really united Australia in some ways. It's something that we can all agree is good for the country.
As I recall, China first threw a tantrum when Australia said, you know, we need to know the origin of the virus, so let's go to the virus. New South Wales has been locked down for many weeks. Springtime this week, is there any promise that you can go outside again?
Well, there is promise, John. There is finally some promise on the horizon. It looks like now on the 27th of September, so a week from now, we will be slowly coming out of lockdown. And when I say slowly, it means that we can now go outside and exercise for limited periods of time. Our local swimming pools, the most important part of an Australian summer, especially here in New South Wales, they are going to start opening again, and there will be restrictions on numbers that can go to these pools, but honestly, we'll be able to get back into the water, and it's just in time too. I mean, our temperatures are starting to get up into the 20 Celsius, the 70 Fahrenheit, so there is finally a light on the horizon.
And what does this mean for the rest of Australia? Because my learning is that different states have different rules. Victoria to the south and Queensland to the north, are they also opening?
Unfortunately, it doesn't look like it. Victoria in particular looks like it's going to remain in lockdown for some time to come. They've just had the protests over the weekend too, which I think has done no favours to anybody wanting to get Victoria out of lockdown. The state government down there is saying that they will remain in lockdown as long as there are cases, as long as they don't have enough people vaccinated. Queensland, that's one of those states that will probably come out of lockdown and go back into lockdown. But you know what? Queensland's doing very well. They have a low number of cases, they do have a very good vaccination program, and they're also stopping people at the border, which is probably how they're actually fixing the problem. Keep people out, you can't get the virus.
Jeremy, you cannot keep the doors locked. Is the vaccine, I understand you have to hit a certain level of vaccination in order to feel comfortable. Is the vaccine arriving? Are you approaching that certain level?
We are approaching it. In most states, it's 70% to 80% on the first dose, and then 70% sorry, on the second dose. The shortage that we did have a few months ago, that seems to have alleviated a bit. When I say a bit, it's because most people have now gone and got the vaccines, and we no longer have the requirement for a lot of the first doses. But at the same time, too, there is still a very slight shortage in New South Wales, and most people who are reluctant and hesitant to go get the virus, get the vaccine, are now starting to do so. So you may suddenly see that spike in demand, which could throw the shortage back into play. But right now, John, I mean, fingers crossed, we seem to be okay with it. But I think, as we've seen in this whole crisis, the shortages here in Australia do come thick and fast when they occur. And it's because we're an island state. We have to import everything, and it's a big logistical chain to get it here. So I think, you know, in a week, in 2 weeks, we'll again be talking probably about shortages again.
Jeremy Zakas in New South Wales, Sydney, Greater Sydney. Jeremy Zakas, 20 years with me, reporting from Australia. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.